And what's Australia's history regarding nuclear weapons? I understand that there was some testing in remote areas of South Australia.
Yeah, look, Australia has, particularly in the light of that history, you would think that Australia, you know, should well aware of the, you know, the catastrophic consequences and the long-term contamination that follows use of nuclear weapons would be in the front line to support this treaty. But Australia hosted British nuclear tests. There were 12, you know, major nuclear explosions at the Montebello Islands off the coast of northwestern Western Australia, and at two places in the desert in South Australia, at Maralinga and at Emu Field. They, you know, caused significant health issues for the 16,000 people who worked on the program, local pastoralists, Aboriginal people, and dusted all the rest of us, you know, with fallout. That's not going to have done us any good. But they also left a legacy of widespread contamination of plutonium and uranium and some other nasties, you know, over the desert in South Australia that is still a major problem of Aboriginal people not being able to access traditional lands and that need to be monitored. And you know, there's been sort of partial cleanups, you know, very expensive but very limited in their effect. You know, there's a huge legacy issue there that was recently recognised when in the last federal budget this year, the Commonwealth Government finally offered a gold card, so-called, you know, providing free healthcare for veterans of that program and the Indigenous survivors. Of course, most of those people are now dead already. So, you know, it's a little too late, but it's a clear recognition that there is ongoing harm from these tests that Australia willingly hosted. Prime Minister Menzies made that decision himself to welcome them, didn't even refer to his cabinet. And then when Britain wanted to test bigger weapons, so hydrogen bombs, even Australia had had enough, and they moved those to Christmas Island in the Pacific, you know, a then British colony, now part of modern-day Kiribati. Australia is unique in a number of not particularly distinguished ways as well, in having had nuclear weapons exploded on its territory and still opposing a nuclear ban. It also has actually mined uranium specifically for weapons purposes in the past. And also it's the only state of the 110 states around the world that are members of nuclear weapon-free zones. We're a member of the South Pacific Nuclear Weapons Free Zone, but we're the only state that's a member of a nuclear weapons free zone that at the same time also claims protection from nuclear weapons owned by somebody else. So there are a number of anomalies that, you know, particularly given our history, are rather painful.
What is next for the treaty, and what is the danger if Australia does not get involved at this stage?
Look, the treaty opens for signature on the 20th of September in New York, which is the first week of the new session of the General Assembly this year. So that starts in September and runs till December. That's the first week, and it's the week that traditionally heads of state and foreign ministers and high-level people are there saying important things. So hopefully lots of governments will sign up to the treaty there and soon after. Once 50 countries have signed and ratified the treaty, so ratification means they have to go through their own constitutional processes, whatever it is, usually parliamentary approval, to actually formally become part of the treaty. Then once 50 states have done that, then the treaty will legally enter into force. So that, you know, that might take a year or a bit more for that to happen. And then once it enters into force, it becomes binding international law on the states that sign up to it. Given the overwhelming majority of the world's nations that voted to mandate these negotiations and participated in them and voted for the agreed text of the treaty, it's, you know, it's essentially impossible to see that it won't achieve a large number of signatories pretty quickly and enter into force. And then those countries will be obliged to do a number of things. One of them is to enact domestic legislation consistent with their obligations. That will include making it a criminal offence, introducing penal sanctions for anybody to assist with any activities related to nuclear weapons. Hopefully it will stigmatise and potentially make illegal to finance production of nuclear weapons. So there'll be things that consequences that follow. There's also a very important obligation on states that sign the treaty to help with looking after the victims of nuclear use and testing, and to do what environmental remediation, you know, can be done. You can't sort of retrieve dispersed radioisotopes and fallout from the atmosphere or the soil or the water, but there are still some major monitoring and cleanup needs and looking after the affected people, including in Australia, that this treaty provides an obligation to. And there's also an obligation for those who sign up to the treaty to seek to try and make it universal, to bring the states on board that are not yet party to it. And the treaty is very well crafted so that whether states have had nuclear weapons in the past, whether they've got them now, whether they host nuclear weapons on their soil that belong to somebody else, like five countries in Europe do host US nuclear weapons that don't actually belong to them, or whether you're like Australia, that you don't have nuclear weapons, that you don't have them on your soil, but you assist with preparations to use them. The facilities in Australia, particularly at Pine Gap in Central Australia, would be no doubt used if nuclear weapons were used by the United States in Asia or the Middle East. We would assist in their targeting and possibly in their launch. So we would have to, you know, end those activities. But there's a pathway for all states to join this treaty. So it really is for everybody, but it's really up to civil society pressure to, you know, put pressure on states to support the treaty and eventually get on board. So that's a job for all of us. It's interesting to note that the process was boycotted by all of the states with the weapons. That's not so surprising, and by most of their allies that claim protection, like Australia does. So the NATO states, Japan, South Korea, weren't there either. The one state that was there was Netherlands. The government hasn't particularly changed its tune there, but very importantly, it was public and parliamentary pressure in the Netherlands that actually got their government to the negotiations. So that's a first step. And it's also interesting that the so-called P3, so that's the US, Britain and France, gave a sort of very terse and angry statement as soon as the treaty was concluded, saying, you know, this will make no difference to us, we'll never join it. It's interesting that it wasn't the P5. So obviously they couldn't get Russia and China on board with that. So I think already we're seeing some chinks in the armour of, you know, unified solidity on the part of those that continue to claim some unique right to threaten all of us with these weapons that pose an existential threat to all humanity. But it's up to civil society pressure now. But with the clear enshrining in law that these weapons are not only immoral, but they're now also illegal. And I think it'll be a very powerful thing to increase the pressure on them. We've seen with the other treaties that I mentioned, even the ones that the US, Russia and China, for example, haven't signed, so the landmines and cluster munitions treaties, they've had a very significant influence on their behaviour. None of them export landmines anymore and their use has gone down dramatically. So the US has actually admitted to its NATO allies that, you know, it doesn't like this treaty, it would interfere with their nuclear war planning and it would delegitimise nuclear deterrence and it would have effects even on the states that haven't got the weapons. Well, that's important recognition because that's exactly what this treaty is intended to do.